Hello and welcome to Powder Radio. This is The Storytellers, and I'm your host, Sam Taggart. We'll be getting into the stories behind the stories, talking to staff and contributing writers to get the details that didn't make it in print. I have an exciting first episode for all of you. I'll be talking to John Clary Davies, the editor of Powder, director of photography, David Reddick, the writer for our feature profile in the September issue, Abby Baronian, and Matt Hansen, our editor-at-large out in Jackson, Wyoming. Without much further ado, let's get right into it. We're live. We're doing it live from La Casita. Welcome to the first installment of The Storytellers, one of Powder's initial forays into podcasting.
We did a reader survey this fall, and our readers, they wanted podcasts. And we like to do what our readers want. We're going to give them podcasts.
We give them Powder Snow, and we give them podcasts.
Yeah, we wish we could actually literally make it snow, but images of snow will have to suffice in lieu of playing God. You want to talk about these podcasts?
Let's do it. So this show in particular is going to delve into the stories and the writers who are writing the stories. We're going to hear the stories behind the stories and give the writers a bit of a personality. We only get so much on the page, and the byline isn't enough, in my opinion.
I want to
give these writers some flesh and bones,
and
some personality.
Exactly,
and photographers. We'll be talking to some of the writers featured in our September issue in the show, and some of our more tenured staff members, our editor-at-large, and our director of photography. Look forward to that. What else can the Powder readers, our Powder audience, expect on a podcast front, John?
Well, Sam, this is the Storytellers show, but the Storytellers is just a part of Powder Radio. And we're going to be launching a trio of podcasts this fall. One hosted by Mike Powell, who does the Powder Awards for us, called Sponsored, The Stories Behind the Skiers. His first guest is going to be Sean Pettit. You may have heard of him. He is a very famous skier, also featured in our September issue. And then Hadley Hammer, a professional skier herself, is going to be hosting a female-centric podcast, interviewing women in the industry who kick ass. And then this obviously being our third, the Storytellers. Stories behind the stories. Because there are many. They don't make it into the magazine. And it's cool to have another platform here, another avenue to talk about those stories and to give another side of the magazine and who we are and what we do.
So how long have you been working for Powder, John?
Well, Sam, you're going to make me feel old, but not as old as a later guest of yours, David Reddick. I've been working for Powder for 10 years in one form or another. I was an intern the summer of 2006, 10 years ago. But I did sleep on a Therm-a-Rest in Tom By, the editor at the time, his spare bedroom. I slept on a Therm-a-Rest in an otherwise empty room with cockroaches for a full 3 months. That was my hazing process. I'd like to think I'm learned something from that.
In your opinion, what's changed and what stayed the same since you began working at Powder?
Well, that's a good question. You know, when I was an intern, we were celebrating our 35th anniversary, and 10 years later, with our September issue of the 45th volume hitting newsstands this month, I think probably in general, things have stayed the same, you know, and we talk about how we ski has changed, but why we ski hasn't. And I think that Powder at its best really captures the feeling of why we ski. But with the 45th, for us, it was just a matter of, as we saw with the, as we put on the cover this issue, just being grateful and thankful that we're still here. We still get to make a magazine. We're grateful for this lifestyle. We're grateful for snow and for skiing and all that the sport gives us.
With this 45th anniversary, we have a new look, a new logo, a new website. That's important. Why?
Well, we saw an opportunity to evolve the look of Powder this year with the 45th. We'd had the same logo for 7 years, and I'm sure you'll get into this more with Dave when he's on, but for me, from a bigger picture, it was just time to give it a new look. We have a relatively new art director, and he saw an opportunity there, and like I said, I think that we don't want to get stuck. We don't want to pigeonhole ourselves. We want to grow like any healthy individual or business. And we think we did that with the redesign.
It's a vintage touch, but with a modern feel.
Exactly. Well put. Still the words out of my mouth.
Filling in the blanks.
What projects can our audience get excited about in this 45th volume, John?
Well, Sam, I'm so glad that you asked, because there's a lot happening, and I'm happy to talk about it. One of the biggest projects of our year is called Monumental, and it's about skiing our national parks. We have a feature-length film coming out that was produced by KGB Productions. It's a Powder original film presented by REI. It's going to be in theaters around the country on tour this fall. And we also have a digital feature that's going to be coming out later in September that has different video clips and stories about skiing each of 5 different national parks. We also, in December, for the first time, are bringing the Powder Awards to Breckenridge in conjunction with Dew Tour, which Powder is helping to put on. Which is really exciting. And then in the events world, coming up soon, as you know, First Chair Fest.
Woo!
The first annual in Salt Lake City. Two Short's going to be there. Boombox. A Rail Jam. And a bunch of great ski films. Then lastly...
And you.
And me. I'll be there.
You and some of the other Powder staffers.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll be hanging out.
Signing autographs?
Yeah.
If asked.
I don't think that will happen. I don't know if I'll get asked, but I'm happy to. And lastly, I wanted to mention Ski Town Hair Down, which is coming really soon in mid-September. The first annual Ski Town Hair Down. Who has the best hair in skiing? You decide. Well, not you, but like you, the general you, readers will decide.
Get out the hair ties.
Get out the hair ties. You know, throw away the hair ties. Let the hair down. Let it flow. Let it loose. And go with what feels right.
Whatever salon you've been seeing the past few months, call them up and say you're not coming back.
Yeah, say sorry. Sorry about, you know, bringing business elsewhere or just not bringing business at all. But you got things to do with your hair, and that's not cutting it.
You're going to bring the business to Powder Magazine.
Exactly.
What stories do you have coming out in the 45th volume, John?
I am fortunate enough that I get to write the intro in each of the issues in the volume. And this year, I'm having fun with it. I'm writing sort of a continuous narrative from the first issue, September through February, sort of following the arc of a season. Beyond that, I have a profile of Auden Schindler in the October issue, who's a leading environmentalist in the ski world, or the world, period, really. He works at Aspen. And then in November, Matthias Fredriksson, who's a Powder senior photographer, one of the best in the world, shooting photos of skiing, had this amazing idea for a story in Norway around this crazy World War II battle that happened in this town in Narvik. And so we went there this winter, and really excited about that one for the November issue. And then lastly, in February, still need to write this one, but have a story about a defunct ski area in Michigan, which I'm pretty excited about.
I've never been to one of those.
It was weird. It was eerie. More to come on that one.
But I look forward to
share it with readers.
Well, John, it was a pleasure having you on the show, this first episode of The Storytellers. Thanks a lot.
Pleasure being here. Thanks, Sam.
See you soon. I'm excited to have Abby Baronian on the show. She's been a correspondent for Powder Magazine for a few years now, starting off as an intern, living in Brooklyn, New York. And Abby, it's great to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be on the show.
This is exciting. So we're digging into the story behind the story here, and you have a feature, the feature profile in our September issue called Scripted. You interviewed and stayed with Sean Pettit, a free skier who's been, I guess you could say, famous since he was an early teenager. So what was your reaction like when you were assigned that story? It's a big piece.
I was totally blown away being assigned this story. I think I'm still, you know, I've been a correspondent now, I think officially for maybe even just a year. And I've been writing for the print magazine for three seasons. And I really saw the assignment as a mark of trust. I think that Sean Pettit is one, he's a person who means a lot to the ski industry, and it was a complicated story to tell. And so I was really kind of flattered that Powder trusted me to tell that story, and also that they trusted me to go into this scene in Whistler that is so, like, Whistler's totally flooded with professional athletes, and Sean Pettit's an important guy in many respects. And it was interesting and empowering that they trusted me to be kind of the face of Powder in that context. That was really like a big kind of confidence boost for me as a writer.
What made you view this story as a challenge?
So I've written one profile for Powder, like on this scale for Powder before, and it was about Kim Reichelm, who is this badass, wonderful human being. She's like in her 50s, and she's kind of been telling her own story for, you know, 35 years now. Whereas Sean is my age, we're both 23, maybe he's 24 now, and he's not somebody I think who would have been, and he wasn't able to bring me into his life in the way that Kim was. Kim was like, okay, great, like, I want you to tell the right story about me. Here's everything that you need to know. Here's my house in Baja. Here's my life in Aspen. Like, take it all in. And Sean was much more guarded, I think, because partly, I think, because of just who he is as a person, and partly because I don't think he is as comfortable or capable of telling, you know, giving me his own life narrative. And that's just because he's young. You know, it's not because he's not a good advocate for himself or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's a lot easier to say, this is my life and here's the trajectory path of it when you're 55 than when you're 23. So it was a very new experience for me in that respect.
Had you ever stayed with a celebrity, you could say, at their house before?
No. You know, I stayed with Kim again in Baja when I worked on that story at her place down there. But Kim, it was so relaxed at that point, and we had spent some time together before. And so going down, it was like going down to, you know, a sort of distant friend's house, whereas I literally showed up at Sean's house, like showed up to his doorstep, never having met him in person. And that was really crazy. And it was also crazy because he was on the mountain when I came, which he like didn't tell me. I was like, okay, I'll be in town at 12:30. I was driving up from Seattle, and I showed up at his house and he wasn't there. He was like, oh yeah, I'll be back in like an hour, I guess. And so I just was hanging out with his dad at his kitchen table drinking coffee for an hour.
So his dad has a nickname, the Groove Meister. How was it being introduced to him and having that be your first encounter in the Pettit profile?
Honestly, I think it was a huge blessing. Sean was not that friendly when I first met him. No, I mean, he's fine. He's a nice guy, but, you know, he's still very guarded, and I think that came across in the story, but he's a very kind of closed-off person in a lot of respects. His dad is, like, such a goofball and so open and so friendly, and so despite the fact that at the time I thought it was pretty weird, I think it was a blessing in disguise because I felt really comfortable with him, and he and I got to, I mean, we sat down and just did an interview for 45 minutes about Sean, and it was really cool to get that time to talk to his dad in person without Sean there.
And you did that before you met Sean. You had the interview with his dad about Sean.
Yes, I did. And that's something that I did. I actually interviewed all of the interviews in the story except for Callum I did before I came out. So I really had like an idea of who I was dealing with and what kind of story I wanted to tell before going, thanks to Chris Turpin and Jody and all of these guys and women. I spoke to his mom before I came out.
You did, I guess, less skiing with Sean than you were expecting. Could you explain why that maybe was the case? And I think it goes along with what you were saying about maybe a commoditized lifestyle. You know, he's kind of placed everything in its specific place.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have the nail on the head with, like, everything has its place in his life. There was no... To me, I see Sean using all of his time as wisely as possible. He's like very organized and very driven. And at the end of the day, there was no real point in him skiing with me. If that makes sense. And I think that that's part of it. It's that, you know, I think he assumed that if I'm writing a story about him as a skier, anything I write about his skiing is going to have been written before, and people already know that he's a good skier, and that's best portrayed through film and photo and not through my writing. I don't think that he was really all that concerned with making sure I, like, saw him ski. And I think part of it, you know, there was some just scheduling stuff that happened. I was supposed to go up on, I think I got up there on a Friday, and I was supposed to stay through Wednesday, and they were going to be filming Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and I was like going to go along for a heli day and watch that happen. And that got totally canceled because of weather. And so that was kind of the big ski experience with him that we were banking on. And then, but otherwise, we skied a little bit on Saturday. He snowboarded, he didn't even ski. And then Sunday we were going to ski, and like we all went out the night before and got home really late. And I woke up at 8:30 ready to ski. And Sean didn't wake up until like 11:30. And so I was just sitting in his kitchen writing, like trying to figure out what's going on, like not about to walk into his bedroom and wake him up.
You said you got some writing done in his kitchen. Did you have a favorite room in his house or a favorite detail in that living space he had created for himself?
Oh my gosh. Well, the kitchen is beautiful. It was a nice space to be because I didn't feel like I was intruding on anybody's personal space. But the kitchen is stunning. It has all these huge windows that look out over Green Lake. There's a hot tub on the deck that at one point his dad, Groovemeister, took apart at 2 a.m. trying to fix it, and then just left all the pieces out on the deck in the snow. And the next morning we all woke up and we were like, what happened to the hot tub last night, Groovemeister? The room that I stayed in was in the basement where Jody lives. And I think that Callum crashed there for a while. And it's so funny because both Jody and Sean are professional. Jody's a professional snowboarder. But the room is a mattress on the floor and then boxes and boxes and boxes of gear. Just like more ski gear than you've ever seen in your life. And like totally untouched. It was so typical.
You mentioned Callum, who's also a skier. Mm-hmm. You know, they're brothers. Callum's the older brother. What's so different about these two brothers?
You know, this is something that I would have liked to talk more about in the story because I think it's really fascinating. They were a package deal when they were kids. They were signed on to K2 at the same time. They didn't appear in all films together, but they appeared in a lot of films together, and it was kind of like the Pettit brothers from Whistler. And Callum was older, and so when they started, Callum was a little better and a little more experienced. But Callum is a lot more like the Groovemeister, a lot more like Greg Pettit, in that he's very happy-go-lucky. He's very, like, he's so funny and was so easy to talk to and was really friendly and reminded me of just, like, the guys that I ski with on a normal basis. Like, he just seems like a pal. And I think that he's a little less driven to success the way that Sean is. Sean, on the other hand, is meticulous and hyper-organized and always has a plan, and like I was saying, is always doing exactly what he needs to be doing at that minute because, you know, this is his time to chill and he's not going to do anything but chill, or this is his time to work and he's not going to do anything but work. And I think that Callum's ski career kind of reflects a more come what may, like the reason I'm doing this is because I love to ski, not because I want to be the best skier in the world attitude. And I think Sean is definitely driven by like wanting to be the very best that he can be in a more kind of calculated way than Callum.
Did Sean have any wisdom to share with you? You know, he's been in the spotlight for so long. Was there any wisdom or insight he gave to you as a tidbit? You know, maybe a parting note, something like that?
What I did, I think, learn from Sean Pettit is that you can be one of the best skiers in the industry and have a life apart from skiing, which I think is also the coolest thing about him. You know, as someone who lives in Brooklyn and is not a full-time ski town dweller, and, you know, I feel very divided between a handful of different interests. It was really cool to see somebody like Sean Pettit, who to me growing up was like the coolest and the very best and like the utmost skier, be like, no, I love like dressing well. I like want to be a businessman. I want to make movies that don't have to do with skiing. I want to, you know, he like loves New York. He loves Vancouver. He's working on a video game. He has all this stuff going on that isn't just skiing. And it was refreshing to see that you can still have it be this huge part of your life. You know, I mean, and you also have to be really talented and still have other interests, which was really cool.
In our feature profiles this year, we're including illustrations as part of that. How do you feel the illustration of Sean plays to your story? And in an overall sense, how do you feel the illustrations are, you know, a good addition for the magazine this year?
You know, so I first saw the illustration when I came to visit the office when we met for the first time, and was totally blown away by it because I had no idea that we were doing that. And it is such a stark image for anyone who's listening to this who didn't see it. It's Sean holding a camera to his head like a gun, which I thought was very, it was very on point. And it's kind of, again, it's like a little violent and it's a little jarring. But at the end of the day, that's kind of how Sean is too as a person. He's like so direct and so forward and so aggressive in everything he does. And again, this image of like, you know, film as a means of like sort of pillorying yourself is kind of what Sean does to me. I mean, he literally directs his own reality TV show. So I think it was a very apt image. I think it really illustrated who he is as a person and the role that cameras and social media and reality TV and filmmaking have in his life. And I also think as a bigger point, the images are really neat in the profiles just because at the end of the day, you see a million images of skiers in powder. It's not a unique thing. And at the end, what we're trying to do in profiles is really get at the core of these people beyond just what they look like on their skis, in their ski gear, who they are as a person. And I think the illustration can be kind of a more nuanced way of looking at that.
Well, Abby, it's been great having you on to the show, The Storytellers. And we'll catch up next time with another story in volume 45.
All right, great talking to you.
We have Matt Hansen, Powder's editor at large. That's what it says in the masthead. He stops by the office every now and then when he feels like it. And he's living in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Matt, how you doing today?
I'm good, Sam. Thanks for having me on the show, buddy.
No problem. No problem. Well, this is The Storytellers, and we're talking about the September issue of Powder, Volume 45, Issue 1, in which you have a feature story, The Grand Scale, how Grand Teton National Park became skiing's greatest treasure. How, you know, this is in your backyard. But other than that, why did you choose this mountain range to cover in this story?
Well, there are a couple reasons. You know, initially, and I guess first of all, it was a way for us to address the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service. And, you know, not only are the Tetons just this fantastic place to go skiing, absolutely world-class skiing. The fact that it's protected as a national park really gives it makes it unique as a backcountry skiing area. The access, how much vertical it gets, how much snowfall is there, but then it's protected forever. And so that was kind of a big reason, but you know, and it's also about what's happening in the Tetons now. And though people have known about it forever, and it's one of the most popular and most photographed mountain ranges in the entire world, people really didn't start skiing in the range, at least in the middle of the winter, until the late 80s. And then in the 90s, it started to pick up some speed. And then in the last decade, as I say in my story, with the improvement of backcountry gear and the access of information on the internet, it has really kind of created, I don't know if I'd call it a rush, but there's definitely a lot more people up there skiing now than there ever have been. And so I wanted to kind of experience that and go with some younger skiers and see what they're experiencing, but then also hook up with some of the older guys who have been doing it and leading the charge now for a couple decades. And so that was kind of what I set out to do in the middle of last winter.
How'd you get, you mentioned you were with some younger guys,
some newer faces on the scene in the backcountry, and some more tenured folk. How'd you get the group together that you skied with for the story?
That's a really good question. And, you know, anytime you get into a story, one of the biggest challenges is finding those people who not only are willing to let you tag along and show you their favorite places and kind of share their love of skiing with you, but it's also, you know, there's so many people who are out there who could tell this story. You know, I started out with a couple guys last winter, Max Hammer and Griffin Post, who are quite well known. They're younger and they absolutely shred in the mountains, and started going out with those guys. And it's kind of, you know, in the meantime, was asking around among some friends in the community here about, you know, who's like, who should I go skiing? Like, who's the guy? And I heard from a couple different people say that this 29-year-old young man named Adam Fabricant was just tearing up the Tetons and going out every single day and doing it quietly. I mean, he'd talk about it with his friends and his ski partners, but outside of Jackson, and, you know, he's not on social media. And so you don't know, there are a lot of people out there, you think, you know, you hope that there are people out there skiing and doing stuff and not posting about it online all the time. And he's one of those guys. He agreed to go out skiing, and we ended up going skiing together 4 or 5 times. And he introduced me to Dan Korn, who was another guy that took me into some of the most beautiful, gnarly, amazing ski terrain that I've ever been in my life and would not be able to do because I don't possess the ski mountaineering skills that these guys do that just come automatic to them. And then the two older guys that I really wanted to link up with is Hans Johnstone and Greg Collins, for a couple reasons, mostly because they have been pioneers. Hans Johnstone and Greg have pioneered lines in the Tetons since the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. And they're still doing it. And they're both in their mid 50s. And they are incredibly low key. They're very grounded. And not only are they getting up into the Tetons, they're skiing, they're putting down just incredible ski routes and still doing it, which is very impressive because they're going out with guys who are half their age and they're leading the way, which is really cool. And so they were also willing to take me along and found some just incredible experiences with those guys too.
Seems like there's a lot of under the radar stuff going on in Jackson, and there's an appeal to chasing that a bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the Tetons, in case anybody is wondering, the Tetons are very intimidating. They're huge. And the skills that you need as a backcountry skier, you know, there are some mellower runs, but anywhere you go, you need to know you need to be on it snow safety wise. And then beyond that, it's having the technical skills, having, you know, knowing your ropes, your knots, carrying shiny, pointy metal things like crampons and ice axes, and knowing when to use those and being comfortable using those tools. You know, but the great thing is that once you are out there and you get into it, for me, doing any kind of ski mountaineering work is totally out of my element. Not to say they don't get afraid and they don't get gripped, because I think everyone does. That's a healthy thing. To have fear, for sure. You know, the talent that they have. Adam is a skier first, and he told me that when he first started to learn how to ski mountaineer when he was going to college at the University of Colorado, that he learned to climb with his ski boots on. And now he's, you know, climbing all over the Tetons and going solo and feeling comfortable in all of it. And same with a lot of other people in the Tetons. It's just kind of, in order to get to some of these places that are truly striking and remarkable ski descents, you do need to have those skills. And now, like, the guide services up here now do schools that teach people how to do these things. And they're not easy schools. I mean, they're doing like 5,000 vertical feet every day for a week. they're assessing snow, they're learning their knots, they're learning how to rappel with their skis on, learning how to, you know, walk on crampons over rock, to climb with crampons on, which I had the interesting opportunity to do last winter. It's not easy. So there's just a lot that goes into it. And the people who are, you know, at the top of the game, they're just good at it all.
How do you take notes out in the field? You have a notebook with you? You know, you're talking about doing some pretty badass, gnarly stuff. Do you have a notebook? Are you whipping out a pen and paper on your way up or down? Or is it back at camp when you're thinking about it over the fire? How do you take notes in situations like these?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And it's kind of a combination. I always bring a notebook. But when you're skinning, and if it's windy and cold, you know, you don't really have that many opportunities to pull it out and jot some notes down. So I take a lot of notes just with my cell phone. I just type in a couple of notes. Maybe it's a word that someone says or a couple words that will help me jog my memory when I get down to the car. And then that's when the notebook comes out and I just write a fury. You know, it's all the above. And then it's just really, really paying attention to everything. And that's hard when you're tired and, you know, you're skiing into some freaking slot that is, you know, a little scary, and you need to think about not just yourself, but your ski partners, because you're definitely a team out there. Like, as much as I rely on them, they're relying on me that I have my shit together in case something happens. And so, yeah, it's kind of a combination, but just really paying attention and observing and being very in the moment is kind of what helps me. And then I take a shit ton of notes when I get home.
So the guys like Fabricant, Korn, Collins, Johnstone, how do they unwind? How do you unwind after such a hyped up adventure in the backcountry? Is there a certain thing these guys like to share with you? Are they doing an après ski, or are they playing acoustic guitar by the campfire? What was it that y'all did to unwind after these adventures?
Beer. Lots of beer. They're skiers just like everybody else. No, you know, what's another thing that's really cool about Grand Teton National Park is that when you get done skiing, you can ski, depending on the time of the year, you know, all pretty much up until May, you can ski all the way to your car. And, you know, of course, you got coolers with beer in the back, and you know, have a couple cold before you go home. But also, Dornan's is this awesome little restaurant bar with some of the best views of the Tetons in the entire valley. And they're open throughout the winter. And so you go down, and it's almost like a mini Europe, where you're hanging out at this nice wooden bar on a wooden stool, and you drink a couple of pitchers of beer with your buddies, and you talk about the day. And then Dornan's, being as, you know, with it as they are, they have huge binoculars that you can look out these big panoramic windows and see tracks of where everybody else was skiing, whether it's the South Teton or Albright, or even, you know, the fun powder skiing on 25 short. So that's what people do. And, you know, Hans, he goes home to his family. He's got kids and a wife, and he runs a business. And, you know, Adam and Dan live in a yurt out in Kelly. So they just go out there and, I assume, just make a fire and try to dry their boots out before they get up at 6 o'clock in the morning the next day to go do it again. And one person I want to definitely mention is Mark Fisher. He shot most of the photos in this feature. He lives in Victor, Idaho, just on the other side of the pass. And he really worked hard and went out skiing with me several times this winter. And that's a difficult job because he's carrying all of his gear, his camera equipment. I just have my notepad and my phone, and where he has a huge camera pack. And he's doing all the same things that these skiers are doing. And the skills to be able to do that are really, that's also just so impressive. And, you know, when you have a photography assignment like this one, you might go out for 8 hours and just slog up and down the mountain and take photos and everything. And then those photos don't get used that were taken that day. So it's a lot of hard work. And he definitely did just a superb job on that. So Mark Fisher, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, really stellar. Full paid. There are two full paid spreads. Well, three if you include the title page of the feature. So really amazing imagery and often underappreciated. These photographers are hiking the same line, but then hiking 100 feet to the left to get in front of the skier, or whatever's going on off camera is, you know, not thought about too often. So recognition there is at the utmost importance. What else can we expect to see from Matt Hansen in this 45th volume?
Well, right after, it was like the day after I skied one of the biggest things in the Tetons, I flew out to Wisconsin and participated in the Midwest Mogul Mash on 230 vertical feet of muddy, slushy bumps, an event that Matt Sturbins put on from Forefront. And that was also another highlight. You know, there's so many different kinds of skiing. You know, limiting yourself to one kind of skiing sort of shortchanges yourself. So to go from skiing powder in the Tetons to bumps in Wisconsin was definitely a highlight last winter. I went to the Sawtooths on a yurt trip in the spring. I'll be writing up a story about that. And then also kind of close to home, writing a profile on Emily Coombs and what she has done with the Doug Coombs Foundation.
I look forward to seeing those all in print. And Matt, it's been a pleasure having you on the show this first episode. We're starting off with a bang, and I'm sure I'll talk to you later in the season. But take care out there in Jackson, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, buddy.
We've got David Reddick in the house. We're talking about the September issue, coming at you live from sunny Southern California. Dave's a man who needs no introduction, our director of photography. Dave, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Sam. How are you?
Good, thanks. This is an exciting year for Powder Magazine. We're in our 45th anniversary. You've been around for a few different anniversaries. What was different about this 45th?
Well, I don't think, to be honest with you, that the 45th is a huge landmark, but it's an opportunity to really come in with some fresh eyes to what we're doing and maybe create a couple new departments, approach things a little bit differently. And I think it was a good moment in time, a good reason to create a new logo, first of all, which I think visually spurred, you know, some changes or just, you know, ways of thinking about things, especially in regard to our cover. And it's, you know, with the first issue, we kept it real simple. We chose a photo that was kind of timeless and just had a kind of a, what I feel is kind of a magical vibe to it. We just kept it simple, and you know, our main cover line on there is grateful, and I think that's what all of us are who work here at Powder, and I think all of us as a community of skiers are grateful for every day we have out there on the hill, you know. If you're not, you're probably not doing it right.
You're missing
right.
Something. Even the rainy days on the East Coast.
Yeah.
What's changed? What's stayed the same over the years?
You're going right into the deep questions, aren't you, Sam?
I ask the hard-hitting questions, yeah. Dave.
Gosh, I mean, not much has changed when you really think about it, right? It's the feeling's still the same. And, you know, what motivates you to get out there and just or dream about your next ski day. I mean, that never changes. And the mountains themselves stay relatively the same. The sense of adventure that we all feel if we're going to hit the road or go somewhere new, I think what it's all about, and that hasn't changed a whole lot.
The other skiing experience. Could you explain what that is? You know, our founders, Dave and Jake Moe, coined the other skiing experience as what Powder is all about. In your interpretation, what's that other skiing experience?
I think from their perspective, they just looked at the landscape of ski media at the time, and people weren't necessarily talking about the, you know, the freeform lifestyle, the adventure, the humor, the inspiration, that was a little bit more about gear and racing and that sort of thing out there. So these guys came in at a great time with, you know, kind of a sort of sideways glance at everything and just came in to have fun.
Getting down the hill with a smile on your face.
Absolutely, right?
How do you approach a magazine? Is there an overall theme you like to go for each issue? You're curating the entire issue photographically. What do you keep in mind in that process?
I follow my gut, you know, and trust trust my feelings on different shots. We obviously work together as a staff, and you know, a lot of it is a group decision as well. And I think each issue just starts to take on its own life as you're going through it, and certain things make sense together as it starts to mold, you know. And but we're making tweaks till the final end, you know, final page is shipped. And I definitely think about things 2, 3, 4, 5 times sometimes, and you know, just kind of let something simmer, come back to it, look at it again, make a cut. You know, it's can be kind of annoying, I think, to some of the staff around me from time to time. But I hope that, you know, that improves the final outcome. I think it does.
You got to glance at it more than once.
Yeah.
Unless it's love at first sight, which I guess we don't know if it exists anyway.
I don't know, Sam. Let's talk about that. Maybe you want to talk about love?
Let's talk about the cover.
All right.
You have the first cover of the year. Does your approach change with each consecutive issue?
Yeah, I think as we start to know what's in our library of photos for the year, we can start to really look at the volume as a whole and what cover might fit where depending on the theme of an issue. I think the most important thing for us is to have some variance and some contrast from issue to issue, and make sure that we're, you know, hopefully surprising our subscribers and readers with a different look every month, and hopefully something that's unexpected. I think that's probably the approach this year more than any other of late, is the freedom to do a little bit more, to wander more with our cover choices and what we're putting out there, and not adhere to as many rules as maybe we have in the past. So that's exciting.
I like rule breaking.
Yeah, me too, Sam.
When you get submissions from photographers, what catches your eye the most?
I don't know what's going to catch my eye, so that's the exciting part.
Sure.
About the job, right? Is just opening a submission, each and every one, especially as they start to roll in through the spring and summer, is absolutely the most rewarding part of the chair I'm sitting in, you know, and I feel very grateful to be able to have that role. And, you know, it comes with quite a bit of responsibility. There's guys and gals that have spent their days, years, lives creating these photographs, and you know, I think of that through every edit that I'm doing, and you know, I just try to be the best steward of their work that I can, and do the right thing, hopefully. You know, some tough conversations that are had, and it's difficult from time to time.
Now let's talk a little bit about the September issue specifically, and Porter Fox, a longtime writer for Powder. He has a story in there, Powder Nexus, which is a dreamy recollection of deep powder snow and it's all of its beauty. How did you approach this story, and what was your thought behind getting those images together to create an emotion, to create an atmosphere?
Yeah, well, you know, Porter and I have known each other a long time, and I know his tastes and to a certain extent. And I think Julie Brown actually mentioned his work as being very lyrical, and especially this particular piece, you know, he just kind of takes you along for this ride throughout a storm cycle. And so that's kind of the pacing that we had going. All these photographs came from, you know, stock that has built up in the library from contributions, even going back a few years, you know, some of the more timeless images. I don't know, where do you want to go from there?
Are you the jaded local?
Am I the jaded local?
I mean, you've been around so long, and, you know, we have this mysterious, anonymous local.
I've been around, I've been exposed to said jaded local often over the years.
So you know the jaded local.
Yeah, maybe he's rubbed off on me a little bit.
Right, hopefully. And vice versa.
No, I'm not the jaded local. Although I'd like to be referred to as the total bro when I walk in for a mount late night. You know.
We'll put that in the masthead. Dave Reddick, total bro. And on that, it's been a pleasure having you on The Storytellers to hear a little bit more about the September issue and the 45th volume.
Is that it, Sam?
That's it.
Come on, there's so much more we could talk about. And then throw in a little, next time, Dave's going to go.
Well, that's our show. Episode 1 of The Storytellers is in the books, and it feels so good. Thanks for tuning in, and a big thanks to my guests John Davies, Abby Baronian, Matt Hansen, and David Reddick. It was a pleasure having all of you on the show. We'll be back next month to take a closer look at the October issue, speaking with Katie Baker, the writer for our feature on the National Brotherhood of Skiers, and Sierra Davis, the assistant editor of Powder, about her recent trip to Monarch Mountain. And who could forget, the Ski Town Hair Down, who's got the best hair in skiing? That's all next month on The Storytellers. I'm Sam Taggart, and we'll catch you next time.